Today is Thursday. It's Pi Day. That means it's January, February, March 14th, 3.14. It's 11:13 in the morning. By the way, the year is 2019. Glad I got all of that out of the way. Hi, I'm John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios of WGN Radio. Listen to me weekdays from 1 to 3.
I'm Steve Bertrand. I host the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
I'm Scott Standish, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, creator of the comic strip Prickly City, and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN. And John, why on Pi Day did you get us cake?
We did have some free cake laying around in the cafeteria, and I snagged you all a bite. I'm sorry it wasn't pie. I wasn't even thinking about
I'm
it.
Eric Zorn, the grateful columnist from the Tribune. Just grateful to have something to eat here because we don't have free food at the Tribune.
You come from a math background, too.
I know.
Your dad's a mathematician?
My grandfather. Grandfather and my son.
And your son, who's got a doctorate in mathematics?
Both my grandfather and my son have doctorates in mathematics.
Where did your son go to college?
He went to U Chicago, and then he went to Berkeley for his PhD.
Oh, I'll bet I know how he got in.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
How much
you
that
dropped
cost you?
$50,000, probably.
Dropped a wad. He had to pretend to be a girls' volleyball player.
He could spike the ball, though.
He really could. He's very tall.
This is the introduction I wrote, but we don't need it now. William H. Macy is the shameless father of a Chicago South Side family in the long-running Shameless series called Shameless. Anyone want to guess where I'm going with this? His wife, and no one else, by the way, was implicated this week in a college admissions cheating scandal. Felicity Huffman, Laura Loughlin are two of the most prominent names attached to the story. There's about 35 student families indicted in Massachusetts, nine coaches, half dozen figures at the company called Edge. It's all Shameless. What should happen next, Eric Zorn? Who should be punished and what should the punishments be?
Well, the first thing that needs to happen, I think, is for these investigations to continue to spider out, because I'm guessing this is just the tip of the iceberg.
They said he had 800 clients.
And his son went to DePaul, and while he did go to DePaul, he donated $150,000 to the school.
It does seem to me that if you are a student who got into a school by foul means like this, then you have to go, whether you knew about it or not.
But what if it was some other guy, not this guy, the singer, who also donated $150,000 to DePaul, at the time his daughter was going to the school? Doesn't that happen?
But this is direct.
You mean it's
Jared Kushner? Are you talking about the Jared Kushner story? Basically,
well,
that's how he got into
Harvard, talking about a lot of stories like that where, you know, we're reacting sort of aghast because we're assuming it's a fair process. It's not a fair. It's never been a fair process. I mean, they've never just taken the best students.
This one's a little different than, say, by a library. First of all, I think this is the cut rate by a library plan, because the numbers still don't add up to a $10 million building on the campus or anything like that. That's going to get junior.
So we've established you're a whore. We're just setting the price.
Yes, exactly.
No, but this is not that, because if you're thinking about scholarship athletes who don't have good grades or people that donate vast fortunes to get a building named after them, at least those are above the board. We know that. This is cheating under the board. This is payment to coaches to put kids on teams.
You're right. I don't want to keep beating it. We don't always know about the
We don't always know about the
science library student exchange. That's not up and up, but the athletes you are. And you're right, this is worse than all of that.
This is exactly my thought when I heard the story break. I thought, well, what is the difference? And the difference is this was literally bribery. I mean, this was buying a slot from some kid who...
Or cheating. I mean, there was some of the cases they alleged that they had either
the test scores change
the test scores. They had somebody take the test who was not the student. So
what a shame that somebody is smart enough to pretty much ace college admission tests or ACT tests, and he's a low-life cheater working for some knuckleheads. I mean, if I was smart enough to get that good of grades on standardized achievement tests, I wouldn't be cheating. I'd be working at Boeing as an engineer or a brain surgeon or some damn
but
thing.
I think it is a really interesting question. What do you do when you have, say, the daughters of Felicity Huffman and William H. Macy? What do you do with them? If they're in the school, and I presume they're performing okay, passing their classes.
Particularly if they were unaware of it.
They were unaware of it.
It's hard to imagine. But say they were. Let's just, for argument's sake, say the kids are the victims here of their parents' overreach. I don't have a problem with those kids being in school. It's been proposed to me that the kids take the entrance, they reapply, maybe blindly. And if they get admitted, then they can stay. What's the harm in letting a kid stay at DePaul?
Well, I'm curious to know what the grades are for these kids now.
Yeah, I was going to say the tests, the administered tests are supposed to be representative of whether they can handle it at school. If they now are handling it at school, I don't think there's any reason for them to prove themselves with a test.
Okay, what do you guys think of this? By the way, Patty Vasquez just joined us. Hi, Patty V.
Hi. Sorry, my apologies.
No, it's good to have you in the house. Welcome, Patty B.
Hi. I'm sorry. I'm jumping into this late, and perhaps I'm retreading ground that's already been covered. I will say this as somebody who was, I guess you would call, a product of affirmative action, and a lot of people in my university, I had roommates that were dismissive of my abilities because they felt that I was there under circumstances that were unfair to them. And that was always... And it,
were you admitted as a Latina?
As a Latina, yes. Yeah. I was there under the President Scholarship because my mother is from Mexico, and that's a qualification. And people,
was it a school that you don't think you would have gotten into otherwise?
I had the grades and I had the scores, but that doesn't matter once you have that label. There are people who think that you don't belong there.
But you check the box because you want to get into... I would check any box that
furthered my chances. So, but people, I've been hearing people say, well, if I was rich, I would want to do the same thing. And yet people never say the same thing about affirmative action. Well, if I was, you know, if I could say I was black, if I could say I was Latina, they don't necessarily make that same leap. But they are saying, I'm seeing a lot of this on social media, that one, this has been going on for a long time, and that two, if I could, I would do the same thing. And, you know, why is everyone so upset about this? One of the issues that I have as well is that these parents were told to tell their kids to go see a psychologist and act stupid so that they could have the learning disability, the qualifications that psychologists use so that people who are disabled can take the test in private or have a longer time period.
This isn't popular. A lot of my ideas I test on the John Williams Show first before I bring them here. I don't think the really bad guys in this story are the parents. They are the bad guys, but they're not the really bad guys. The really bad guys are the coaches or the facilitators or the people. Those are the people who are supposed to be maintaining the integrity of the process. And if it weren't for them, this wouldn't have happened. I think their crimes are greater than the parents paying off
people. Well, that one particular angle, the coaches are. But the parents were also, again, they were supposedly hiring or having hired for their students, people, to, you know, students to take the test for them, to have them pretend to need special accommodations for the tests. Those parents are guilty.
I'm not saying they're not guilty. I'm just saying I don't think they're the worst of the offenders.
The images and videos of Felicity Huffman, you know, one minute you're a movie star with a movie star husband, you got beautiful kids, they're going to college, what could be better? We looked up their net worth. Life is good for that family. And then the next thing you know, you just, your head is hung, you're in shame, you don't know if you're going to go to jail. I'm always amazed at how quickly the pendulum in people's lives can swing the other way.
Yeah.
But what do you guys think of this? Maybe they just ought to be transparent about it. I don't care how smart your kid is. If you want to give us $1 million, he's in. Set the price. Maybe the schools should be... No, really, I mean, no, what would the harm in that be? Not that many people have $1 million, but I mean, maybe you could just price it out. Private schools could do that for sure. And maybe even public... I mean, think about that. If, as a student of Southern Illinois University, where I graduated from, if you said, my school will get $1 million for the library if we let another kid on campus who maybe doesn't belong, but let's give him a try. We do that for football players... I would be happy to sell those seats.
Well, it sort of plays into the lie of... Like,
I'm just thinking that out loud, by the way.
I like it.
Of student athletes. You know, that's preposterous. Why not let them major in football?
Yeah,
no,
right.
No, I'm serious. Like, how do you deal with money? I mean, have rudimentary, math and
restaurant ownership 101.
No, but nobody suffers for having spent 4 years on a college campus unless they're just complete criminals and ne'er-do-wells. Maybe by osmosis, something positive will happen to somebody, regardless of their qualifications. So I don't mind sharing some space on campus.
Will these names be public?
Of these students?
I think if we're going to play out your scenario, I think they have to remain private because it would be bad for the students if they knew they literally bought their way in and people would pick on them.
Is it worth going and examining each case individually before you decide whether to out the student? To say, well, okay, this student clearly knew that he or she didn't take the SAT.
I'm sorry, I'm in John's fantasy world about you pay $1 million and you get to go to school.
Oh, I see.
Do you like that idea, Eric?
I'm still rolling around in my mind. I guess, you know, especially for a private college, they could do it if they wanted to.
As long as you dedicate that money to students who have need.
Well, that'd be a nice way to trade it out, yeah, right. And then help somebody else. Last week, Eric Zorn said that he was happy to see that there were only 5 weeks between the general election, if you will, and the runoff election on April 2nd for mayor. Just enough time, he said, to get a feel for the issues and remaining candidates. Scott Stantis felt maybe 3 weeks would be enough.
Oh, yeah.
Given what we've heard in the last couple of weeks, I'm inclined to go with Scott on this.
Can we vote today?
Yeah, we know what we know. We know all we need to know.
I have to stand up for the Tribune's forum the other day. We had a debate Tuesday morning at the Tribune, and it was 75 minutes of civilized exchange without interruptions and name-calling. Maybe boring, some people might
say.
Maybe
because it wasn't on TV.
But in a high mind.
Well, it was on stream, yeah.
We had good web traffic on it. I think these women saw, both of them and their advisors saw that debate a week ago tonight, Thursday night, the NBC5 debate, and realized that this was just degrading to both of them.
You know, I think it's interesting and frankly disappointing that Toni Preckwinkle and her people would try to criticize me for being successful. I find it highly ironic.
You know, I grew up poor, too. That's not the point. The point is what you choose to do with your time and talent as
Indeed.
An adult.
And it was a shameful. I ran extended excerpts from that little fight. And I thought it was, and then that's when I wrote that column, like, this is horrible. We need to get this over
and
with.
How many times did she say, frankly? There was a disparity, right, between you and somebody else.
I said 29, and someone else counted 32, frankly.
The candidate you're talking about is?
Lori Lightfoot. She just has a weakness for frankly.
And I hate that, because it implies that anything they said before that wasn't.
Only.
Well, no, but if you say it every single second, then everything is being frank.
She didn't get a chance to qualify everything as being honest. Well, what did you guys make, though, of that spin out of that, where there was an issue about Toni Preckwinkle dog whistling Lori Lightfoot's orientation? She, when asked to say something about her opponent that was good, really made sure everybody knew Lori Lightfoot is gay.
She's open and honest about her LGBTQ orientation. You know, I think it's really important in this country that we be respectful of differences and that we understand that all of us matter. And that there is dignity in each and every one of us. And there has been so much discrimination and prejudice and homophobia in our country.
Was Preckwinkle being sincere there, do you think?
I'm going to say yes. I think Toni Preckwinkle's record on LGBTQ issues is excellent. And I think that I think she honestly does respect Lori Lightfoot.
You don't think she was trying to play both sides of the coin there?
I don't think so. But, you know, I mean, this is a question that was bound to come up. Anyone who's ever watched television in this town knows Carol Marine loves that question. And she's gotten some people on it.
I don't like that question, but fair enough. What do you think, Scott?
I think it was a dog whistle. I don't think there's any question. The minute it came out of her mouth, I was like, oh! She didn't.
Hands on hips.
She did. So, yeah, I think it was a dog whistle.
It could be. I mean, in talking about Lori Lightfoot's openness about her relationship and you know, her lifestyle, like her life in her circles, and this is true, we know a lot of people who are not public about who they're with. She just isn't accustomed to being able to even say anything
publicly. This hadn't come from a politician who has a record of being very supportive of gay rights, that might be one thing. But I don't think that's Toni Preckwinkle. I mean, I think she has a record of being pro-gay rights and supportive of all of that. So I took her at her word. Yeah.
She has, but, I mean, look at the numbers. Look at the breakdown of that election and the districts that Willie Wilson won. And Willie Wilson won, and I'm guessing, and I'm pretty sure I'm right on this, that a lot of traditionally black churches tend to run very conservative on those issues, on social issues. If you want to win those 17, how many, 18, how many awards?
He won 14 awards, and he came out and endorsed Lori Lightfoot on Friday and was asked about this issue, and he said something to the effect of, you know, I've been discriminated against in my life. It's time for us to get beyond discrimination. It was a pretty righteous thing that Willie Wilson said. And I think that that message will not be, I don't think that this issue of Lori Lightfoot being gay is going to be a big factor in this election.
Maybe not. Well, you know, we did a little unscientific poll. It was like 94% of the respondents at WGNRadio.com said it's not an issue.
Oh, great.
You know, her orientation.
I think her being gay will be more of a motivating factor to bring people out to vote for her than it will to discourage voters from coming out.
You know, I think embedded in that, though, is what Preckwinkle said, and that is she didn't say incumbent, but she suggested that it really is important that people who are gay come out as gay if you are a public figure. I can think of a number of politicians and personalities in Chicago and on the national stage. We talked about that Peoria congressman last week who people questioned his orientation.
We talked to him.
Yeah, we did. And we didn't bring that up because I thought, oh, hell, it doesn't matter now. But that's out there, too. Here's the point. Is it necessary? Is it important? What is it about their exposing their orientation? Should they or should they not? Is that a fair thing to judge them on?
Is it? I mean, I've always eaten a big bowl of I don't care in the morning on stuff like this because this is something that's between you and whoever, right? And so for me, orientation never, ever played. And I recognize that there are bigotries and there are...
Well, that's it. Pardon me, Scott, but just answer this. If you are a person in a legislative body or an executive in a governmental body, you have an opportunity to control people's lives. So if you're a celebrity, if you're Scott Standis, we don't care. It doesn't matter. But if I'm a voting person, if I'm making decisions for the people in Illinois or Chicago, then maybe it is helpful to know what your orientation is. Republicans who are gay and don't say that, I think, are doing a disservice to themselves or the truth of their party platform.
I think we're going to get past that in the next 20 years, maybe. I think the Democratic Party. I think the Democratic Party is largely past that. I'm going to be curious to see the extent to which, Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, how his being gay plays in Iowa. And New Hampshire, Iowa's a very conservative state, whether that's going to be a factor for voters.
Well, just the fact that he's running, and more than that, he's gay, he's married.
Right.
You know, I think that's a big part, too.
In Alabama, the current governor has had a long-term girlfriend. It's one of the worst-kept secrets in Alabama, and she won with almost 60% of the vote.
Not exactly the same thing, but the point is, what, that it's not traditional, right. And it might upset some people?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
In Alabama?
Alabama, you would think that this would be the death knell of any political career.
I've always wondered how that might affect Cory Booker. I've liked him, and I don't know what's going on there, and I thought, oh, I wonder if that's going to be a card somebody will play.
I'm even struggling with how to put the words
Have you heard
together.
About Rock Hudson?
Right, exactly.
Liberace.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think that we are going to move past this. I think that in 20 years, it's not going to matter.
I hope it doesn't take 20.
But I think, to your point, John, in order to get to that 20-year, in those 20 years, that people do have to be honest about who they are and forthcoming. And I don't know if you'd be forthcoming. Just be true to yourself. I think that affects how you govern, too.
Are you gay? And so, yeah.
Right.
And you're like, oh, okay.
But I also say, if someone says, are you gay? And you say, you know what? That's my personal life. I'm not going to discuss that. I think you should be entitled to do that, too.
Of course.
So, John, I guess I don't agree with you.
I would challenge the 20-year thing only to say that the arc of from no gay marriage to gay marriage was the. If you look at the history of this podcast,
this channel we call U.S.
this country, in terms of a civil rights movement, that was remarkably fast.
I want to move on to Illinois, which has an infrastructure bill coming up, and one way to pay for better roads and bridges that don't crack along Lakeshore Drive is to either raise the gas tax. But another way to pay for it would be to tax vehicles per mile driven, assuming none of you have electric cars. Does anybody love the idea of taxing you per mile but via GPS? And there's a lot of questions and some problems with this.
No.
But here's the point. If you have an electric car or a hybrid car, you don't pay for the roads. Even if you always use public transportation, you're getting things delivered to you. You know, your mailman drives a car, if nothing else, or a truck.
You could argue that you're paying for the roads that delivery guy's buying is paying his road taxes, and the price gets
woven into
conveyed to you. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
The gas tax hasn't been raised in Illinois since the early 90s, 91.
Yeah.
And I think the federal gas tax hasn't been raised for a similar length of time. And this is a real problem. I like the idea, I think it's fair. I realize that there are problems with privacy and other things, and those people around me who are sighing and groaning about this, I know for a fact, are carrying with them at all times devices that track just about everything
they exactly.
do.
You know, and I even brought up two things. My daughter, her car died along the road in L.A. this week, right? So she has an old gas-guzzling car. So she, because it's a gas-guzzling, badly running car, is having to buy more gas than the person who has a newer car. So she's paying disproportionately. Now, you could argue that she's polluting too, so maybe she should. I don't know. But the other part of it is that every time you go to get your emissions test, they make a record of your mileage. So the state is already recording your mileage on your car. It's just... It doesn't feel as icky that way.
They don't know where you've
driven. They don't know where.
If you've driven in Indiana, Ohio, we do a lot of trips to West Virginia in our car.
But they would. Everything like that. Okay, but then what about if I'm driving out of state? Or what if somebody from out of state drives through on our roads? They're not going to have the transponder. They're not being tracked by the state. So I guess they're going to skate. And some of those questions or oppositions are legitimate, but a lot of them do have answers that can be worked out. We had a representative from the Metropolitan Planning Commission in our studio this week to talk about it. And I said, so you're pushing this, you support this. She said, we are pushing a trial. Let's see what happens. If she had said we're putting lead in the water, she would not have gotten more resistance from our listeners. People don't like it, don't trust it. They think that because it would probably be given to a third-party vendor to oversee, we'll have the parking meter thing all over again. I felt bad. I sent her a text after she left the studio, and I said, I really appreciate you coming in, and please come in again.
Well, I did a column on this a few months ago, and I got a similar kind of response to people. There are a bunch of different reasons to object to it, but there are also a bunch of different reasons to object to the way we do it now. And one of them is that the gas tax is pathetically small, given that it hasn't been raised in close to 30 years.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is multiple problems. One is that cars are much more efficient than they were, so they're not using as much gas. And the other problem is that you have these electric cars that don't use any gas. So we need to pay for these crumbling roads and rebuild these bridges and so on, and how we're going to do it. So that's the problem. And the question is, okay, which of the imperfect methods of solving that problem are we going to use? There's a problem. Every solution we talk about, what about people who drive through? What about this? But you've got a problem. What about people who are driving electric cars and not paying any gas
tax? And it's
right
not
now?
Perfect. Now, what about the people who go and buy their gas in Indiana and live in Illinois and then drive around? They're not contributing to the state taxes as well. So it's not. It's never going to be whole, I would imagine.
Yeah, isn't there a toll for them to get in and out of the state?
Yeah.
What if you take a toll road?
You don't have to.
You don't have to.
Well, let me take you down to the country where you can sneak in.
No.
Yeah.
don't take the Skyway.
South of the Skyway, there's a place called the Indiana border. Right. It goes all the way down, and you can. It's not like Mexico where there's a wall.
It takes about five minutes longer.
They can walk right in here and take advantage of everything Illinois has to offer.
Listen to Zorn. He sounds like a guy who avoids the Skyway.
I do this trip all the time. I do this trip all the time, and I always look at my little map and see what the time difference is going to be to take the Skyway. Is it worth the money to take the Skyway?
Yeah, what's the Skyway like? $7, right?
Yeah, total when you take the
I take it all the time because it's a breeze. I love the Skyway. And I've got $14, but dang, that's a lot round trip, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't see it. I've got the transponder and I don't even notice. By the way, speaking of good ideas that got no support on my show, we also had a woman on who came up with an app called Appolition. It enables you to round up on your credit card purchases for everything you do, say on your MasterCard or Visa. It'll automatically round up, and that money will go to an account that helps pay the bail for people at Cook County. So what do you think about rounding up? Boy, people had a problem with that, too.
I love the idea. I'm not sure about where the money goes. If you could have a choice of charities or...
And this is not that. There are already funds. You could make a donation right now, write a check out to an organization that collects money for bail for people at Cook County.
Because Willie Wilson does this, doesn't he?
Probably. It certainly affects a lot of people on the South and West Side.
Well, you know, it presents the argument for getting rid of cash bail, because if you get somebody who's in jail and you bail them out with money that's not his or hers, then you've removed every incentive to return for that person has. I mean,
the purpose of bail
is like, I want my money back. If it's not your money, why do you come back?
It's your bond to come back,
but I think that there's a good broader point about that cash bail is keeping people in jail who don't belong there, who aren't dangerous, who could be,
you know, I didn't ask her, and that would be interesting to see, okay, then what is the rate of return to the obligation that these people have who get out? Do they show up at the same level that people who have put up their own?
Well, but I mean, if they don't show up, then they get rearrested too. So there's that incentive. But
that would be true in theory, without cash bail.
I think it's the right problem, but the wrong fix. I mean, I think I thought we were moving toward getting rid of cash bonds.
I thought so too.
So that's the issue.
I also think that there's so many things that people don't already give money to that this is not something that will be easy to garner any sort of support. I think that people are like given a choice of where their money's going to go. This isn't going to be on their list of the top 5, 10, or 20.
The Tribune this week got the same 120-page indictment or affidavit that the Sun-Times had a couple of weeks ago. This is the Danny Solis story, the Chicago alderman who's...
That hurt a little bit, didn't it, you guys?
We'll pause.
Well,
I didn't mean that they got it first. I meant that John pointed it out that way.
Oh, that's really? What led into it? Yeah.
Well, but here's, pardon me, I didn't mean to slam you guys at all.
I like my friends at the Sun-Times. I'm good for them. They took advantage of a little gap in the
Right, they didn't out-report you guys. Literally, somebody accidentally,
It showed up by accident, and they downloaded it, and they had it. And I mean, it's a good enterprise for them.
Good fortune for them.
Sounds like a scene in a movie.
But not much has happened since then, right? I mean, has the story substantially changed other than now the Tribune is reporting on it with the same information that the Sun-Times has had? I'm kind of waiting for chapter two on this story, and not much has happened.
I am too.
Well, everyone was so excited. They were convinced that Madigan was going to be on the tapes or that this was there were going to be more indictments coming.
And it would happen after the election. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're waiting until April 2nd now, but we thought the feds would do more about this. And I don't know what's going to happen next. I'm very curious.
I was thinking that the Sun-Times was holding back and they were going to let out the information they'd gotten in drips and drabs and then they were going to build up to some big reveal. But evidently not. Now the entire document is online.
Would you do that? If you, as a reporter, would you hold back the big nugget for a few weeks?
I don't know if you'd hold back the big one, but you parcel it out. If you've got something that people are interested in, you've got like a little revelation here, a little revelation there, right. Get people buying the paper, checking the website. Yeah, I think people do that, sure.
Kind of the way CBS did the R. Kelly interview.
Or the way WikiLeaks releases the emails.
Yeah, right. No kidding. Let's talk a little bit about Trump land. We'll go there at the end of this podcast now, but he did touch on a number of stories, and maybe the second biggest or biggest story of the week was one that the president put two bizarre tweets out about, and that is the grounding of the MAX 8 and MAX 9 jets. Before that happened, though, the president said, everybody knows that airplanes are too complicated these days. You've got to be an MIT computer scientist to fly them. I don't want Einstein behind the controls. I want a well-trained pilot.
So it's stupid end of the bar stool kind of conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the sort of thing we do, but he shouldn't be doing. But I don't understand. It sounds like a criticism of pilots. I mean, the field of medicine, for instance, is extremely complicated now with robotic surgery and laser surgery and so on. It's very technically complicated, but you still have, at the other end of the devices, you have skilled doctors operating them. Same thing with the pilots are good.
Did anyone do any reporting on what was on Fox 2 minutes ahead of that tweet? Because that sounds like something that
I totally agree. I thought, Where did he even get this? How does he know that the planes are fighting with the pilots and the computer software? Somebody on Fox said that, and this is his yeah, me too, but it's not
me too movement.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, there are moments, I think, when the readout in the cockpit tells the pilot something's happening that isn't, so the pilot will react in a way that actually makes the problem worse.
That the pilot can't react because the computer is overriding the better intentions of the pilot. And that's a software glitch, evidently, in these MAX 8 and MAX 9 jets. So the president is on to something here. Peter Greenberg said he has accidental aviation knowledge in this post. But I get that, okay? But I don't know that he even knew that when he was posting this. He was just reacting like a lot of us.
Well, I mean, what's the point? I like my old-fashioned planes. We're not supposed to have any progress. Or
stop with camel.
You've got to pick. Yeah. Maybe we're going to go with Orville or Wilbur. I don't know.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Well, the question for us was, would you have flown on a MAX 8 or MAX 9 this week before they were grounded? What would you say about
No. And I actually got hooked for a while on FAA. They have computer animations of what happened to these plane crashes. And a lot of them, like that person said, he stumbled onto the right idea that there's so much automation and so much computer interface with a human being, and a human being either badly trained or ignores something, and they, you know, drive the plane to the ground, which, you know, if you're on it is, you know, bad.
Yeah, well, I every day think how many planes are in the sky, and whatever the bad news is that day. Look, we've just had a decade with one crash and fatalities. That's a pretty good record.
In the U.S.
In the U.S. Yeah. States. So I still feel pretty good about flying.
I only fly United, and they don't have any of those.
I think it's magic every time a flight works, so I don't think I would.
You can't believe we're getting off the ground here.
Magic. Right. I wouldn't go through the trouble of trying to reschedule. I think I would take the flight.
Yeah, my wife is flying this weekend, and she had actually checked to see what plane she was
on. What would she have done?
She wouldn't have taken it.
Really?
I'm sure she wouldn't have. But I wouldn't have even bothered to look. I just, you know.
I did look. I'm flying this weekend, and I did look, and it's not. But I don't know what I would have done had I known that it was. I'm on a group flight, so I wouldn't have had power to change it anyway, I think.
Also, in Trump land, Paul Manafort picked a bad week to be the big story because he didn't get nearly the coverage he might have otherwise. I don't know if he wanted a lot of coverage, but effectively, his sentence was doubled.
Well, and then he was indicted in New York on state charges.
I thought that was the big news development there. I feel like Trump has been signaling in subtle ways that he's going to pardon Manafort when he gets the chance. maybe he's not going to do it now, but he's going to wait. And so these local charges, these state charges in New York that Trump has no control over, big deal.
I think it's incredible that we have a president who says he feels sorry for someone who's been convicted on so many charges and so many crimes. And he says that he feels sorry for them and doesn't say, you know, I wish he hadn't done those horrible things. I mean, like, that's the rest of the sentence. He's been convicted.
I don't even go there with this guy.
He's been convicted of really sleazy things. He did some really bad things. And I know Trump feels bad because he was like caught up in the maw of this, of the Mueller investigation. But he still was caught doing some terrible things.
Yes.
If you pardon someone for doing that, you're basically saying I don't think those are crimes, or I don't think they proved you guilty, and they are crimes, and they did prove him manifestly guilty. And a pardon is going to be very hard to explain.
It's interesting just to watch the slow rollout of the national emergency too.
The slowest emergency ever.
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of going the way the president said it was going to go. You can see this thing, don't you, Eric, ultimately going to the Supreme Court? Is that where this will end up?
Oh, I think it's going to have to, yeah. And there is reporting that they are seeing a record numbers of families presenting themselves for asylum at the border, and that this is causing a kind of a crisis situation. The thing is, though, that is not a crisis or an emergency that a wall is going to address, that these families are not, you know, trying to swim the river or something. They are going to ports of entry and presenting themselves for asylum. And there is a demonstrated uptick in that.
Legally, right? It's a legal movement.
They're attempting to present themselves legally. And this is a big problem, but it's hard to discuss that in terms of there aren't people storming the barricades, so to speak, down the border, and which is what a wall would ostensibly block. So,
in a 24-hour period this week, while we're in Trump land, in a 24-hour period, I'll just read you the topics that the president tweeted on. I won't read you the tweets. I'll just read you in a 24-hour period the various tweets, and this does not include all of them. He tweeted on the following things: the national emergency at our border, the Democrats are for open borders and crime, Nancy Pelosi and impeachment, the Steele dossier, Diamond and Silk's comments on political bias. Look them up if you don't know who they are. They're one of the 45 people the president follows. Crooked Hillary, fake Melania, the Lisa Page transcripts, California halting the death penalty for, quote, 737 stone-cold killers. He tweeted, keep America great and make America great again. He commented on Jay Leno on Fox and Friends and how boring other late-night TV shows are. How great life is in America, what with the economy doing so well. Lots of economic tweets. And again, he also said that the fake news media photoshopped the fake Melania into his visit in Alabama. And that was part of one day's tweets.
I got a question about fake Melania. Isn't facial recognition software able to solve this question pretty easily?
I don't think you need that to solve this question, Eric.
No, have you seen her? It looked like Caitlyn Jenner.
It really did not look like Melania. And
Who do you think it was?
Oh, I know it was Melania, but the thing is, like, this is exactly the kind of thing that Trump would do. It is so consistent with him. The thing is that maybe he did it just to yank the chain of the news media.
It reminded me of the Castro brothers down when one of them was the mayor of San Antonio, and he sent the other one for like a river parade to fill in for him. It's not just Republicans who do these kinds of shenanigans.
Did you ever see Dave? It's a good movie.
Here come our recommendations. I'm going to recommend you like me on Twitter. I'm WGN King John. I posted that video of two, looks like little monkeys. They're brothers. They were separated for medical tests or something, maybe at a zoo, wherever. But anyway, these two little young monkeys were separated. And then they were brought back together inside some setting to see each other, having been separated for a time. And they run into each other's arms and hug each other sitting there and look at each other and do everything but say, I missed you, I loved you, and probably did say that in monkey speak. It's just the most heartwarming, sweet thing you'll ever see. And we need more videos like that. It's got like 240,000 likes and 82 zillion retweets. So follow me on Twitter. You can see it there.
There's a video similar to that where a woman who trained some lions when they were little, and she comes back to see them. Have you seen this one? And the lions come running up to her, and they like jump up, and they give her a big hug. And you're thinking, my God, all they have to do is turn their head and bite her head off. And
give us another recommendation.
I got one. And I have two, actually. They're both magazine articles. One is called No Joe, Joe Biden's Disastrous Legislative Legacy by Andrew Coburn in Harper's. He calls Biden the champion of yesterday's sordid compromises. And there's a cover story in Vanity Fair, Beto O'Rourke, I'm Just Born to Do This by Joe Hagan. And I sent links to Elif, and she's going to put them on our Facebook
page. How about you, Scotty?
Hulu has a show called Letterkenny. Anyone?
Nope. Not yet.
Oh, do yourself a big fat favor. It's a guilty pleasure. It's extremely fun. Apparently, it started as a web series, and Hulu picked it up. And it's just this group of characters living in a small, very small rural town in Ontario, Canada. And it is I can't describe it. It sometimes becomes almost surreal. But it's a delight.
Letterkenny.
Letterkenny, one word. I sent the link to Elif, so it will also be on our page.
Patty Vasquez.
Yes, there's a book called Say Nothing by Patrick Radden Keefe, and it's this incredible story about a widow of she was a mother of 10. She disappeared in 1972, and later in 1998 her body was discovered in a shallow grave. And it's an incredible mystery. There's investigative journalism, and the writing is, you know, you really get this idea of what the troubles, you know, we kind of, it's a distant memory somehow, and yet here we are talking about Brexit and the possibility of another hard border. So it's a really good book.
Steve and I are both reading that book too, and it's really well written.
Yeah, he's incredible.
And it's amazing what we don't know about that story or that part of the world. And it was not that long ago, the Troubles. But the name of the book is called Say Nothing.
Say Nothing.
Say Nothing, which is what a lot of them did. Nice to see you, Patty Vasquez, Eric Zorn, Scott Stantis, Steve Bertrand. The Mincing Rascals are produced by Elif Garris. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.